everybody. Welcome to episode 3 of Scholarly Peers podcast. I hope you have enjoyed the previous two episodes with two of my colleagues talking about their experiences in journal peer review. As you realize, I'm starting the series with early career researchers like myself and others who start navigating the process of journal peer review in different capacities. And joining me today is Dr. Mark Carver from the University of St. Andrews. It's very nice to have you with us today, Mark.
Hi, thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, so let's get started. Can you briefly tell us about yourself and maybe your experience in journal peer review?
Sure. Well, I'm a lecturer in TESOL, so most of the journals I review for are in that area, so System send me a fair few. But I'm also quite involved in educational research in Scotland, and the networks I'm in tend to send me reviewing in those areas. So I review for Education in the North, which is run out of the University of Aberdeen, and I'm heavily involved with the International Professional Development Association. They have two journals where I work as the editorial assistant. So that's Professional Development and Education, PDIE, and Practice, which is more a practitioner research journal or a early career research journal. So those are my main peer review activities. But also I tend to get the random invitations, and if it looks like an interesting abstract, I'll usually click accept.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's start with your experiences as an author. Can you share with us some unforgettable peer review experiences as a writer?
Sure. Well, I always tell my students about this one because I submitted to the Teacher Education Advancement Network journal, which is practitioner research in higher education. And the feedback I got from that was really encouraging. You know, they suggested things to change and ways to improve the paper. But this is my first time getting feedback apart from feedback on an assignment, and I just thought, well, oh gosh, they're saying there are 20 things wrong with the paper, they're obviously not interested, I'll go find somebody else. And it was when I showed this to my supervisor, she said, no, you just need to spend 2 or 3 hours doing these things, send it to them, and then they'll publish it. And I just had no idea. I was saying, well, yeah, if you got an assignment back from your lecturer and they told you 20 things that were wrong with it, it's not a very good assignment then. So it was a complete shift in my expectations for peer review. But likewise, I've had some of the best, most helpful feedback from peer review. One that I always keep in mind is, it wasn't actually about the content, that they just said, you need to give your writing room to breathe. And it was just such a nice way of me understanding what the issue was. And that's really stuck with me. So when I write a particularly dense academies paragraph, I will still now, 10, 15 years later, look at it and go, no, come on, you need to take a breath there. So it's been very encouraging for me as an author. I've occasionally had the kind of cliche reviewer two feedback that we tend to talk about on Twitter. The most recent review I had back, I was trying a new analysis approach and arguing that it would be a nice methodology to try on some big data sets. And one of the reviewers said it was statistical voodoo, which I thought was not a very nice phrase. And I did actually challenge that. I said, yeah, come on, let's. Yeah. I take the point, but you don't have to say it like that. But again, I think there's perhaps something liberating in the anonymity of it. So comments like, this writing's too dense, you need to give it a bit of space, or this method looks a bit dodgy. It's the kind of thing that maybe a lecturer wouldn't say to me. So I think I've had some really good, honest, pure feedback from peer review. And I think that my experience as an author has been overwhelmingly positive. I think it's incredibly generous. Some of the people who act as peer reviewers.
Right. You mentioned something quite interesting when you shared your experience about receiving 20 things from the reviewer that they want you to change. And you approach your supervisor and he or she, gave you advice about, don't give up so easily, tackle the points one by one. So do you think supervisors have a role to play, or an important role to play, in guiding ECRs in particular through the peer review process?
I think so. A lot of my early work was on feedback as well. So it was this kind of unusual situation that you're getting feedback on an article about feedback, and probably from someone I've cited who writes and researches about feedback. So, you know, if you're getting feedback from, I know a lot of it's not, you know, David Bell's giving you feedback, it should be pretty good feedback. So you kind of expect that within, even though it's anonymous, you know the kinds of people who work in different journals and would be looking at that kind of topic. So I think the supervisor can help you navigate that, and particularly in areas, you know, if you're not a researcher in feedback, then perhaps you have to expect that it will be perhaps a bit more blunt or idiosyncratic, and writing creates ambiguity, and ambiguity is always perceived negatively by the recipient. So I think having another person to say, no, that's a perfectly normal kind of comment, don't take it that personally. My first professor on my master's was Paul Ashwin at Lancaster, and he always said, just stick it in a drawer, give it 2 weeks, you know, read it, put it out of your mind, come back to it 2 weeks later, and then have a proper look at it. You take a lot of the emotion out of it. And I think that's really good advice. 2 weeks probably isn't good advice, because journals want revisions back within 2 weeks. But giving yourself a day at least is, you know, just take some of the emotion out of it. And there's people who are doing these peer reviews in their free time. They're doing it in a hurry, and they're probably going to be a bit blunter with language, and they might not have intended it to be like that. So I think a supervisor who can walk you through and say, that's the kind of thing to expect, absolutely. And some of the universities I've worked at, the professors will do that for staff as well, so it's not just something for students. And I found that really, really helpful. Kay Sambol did it for me. We were both at Napier together briefly. And again, she looked through it. And again, it was a piece where I thought, they wanted so much changed here that it's not really the paper that I wanted to publish. And she said, but you could kind of just do it fairly quickly, get it out, and then that's published. And you can take this other idea and do it somewhere else. It's back to that issue of trying to say too much in one go, I suppose. So again, that you know, it's someone else looking at that and helping you come up with a plan of how to respond. Editors will sometimes do that for you as well. I've had an editor say, you know, reviewer one said this, reviewer two said this, and it's contradictory, and here's my advice. And I think those journals where the editor takes that active role, they're really good to write for. Rather, I don't know what your experience is on some of your journals, but when something comes back from peer review and you send it for revisions and it comes back again, I tend to ask the editor to make a decision. I don't send it back to the reviewers. It's been 6 weeks and they've probably forgotten it anyway. But I think having somebody help to mediate that, whether it's a lecturer, a professor, an editor, I think that's really important, because the feedback can be a bit raw.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I really like your message is, you know, a lot of the ECRs, when they started the peer review process or journey, they kind of felt like they're doing this alone. But what you mentioned is there are people along the way that would provide support or guidance or, you know, pointers for you to get through that process. So I think that's a very, very good message for ECRs. So let's move on a little bit to talk about your other identities as peer reviewers and also editorial assistants. So any unforgettable, of course, both positive or negative experience as peer reviewers and editorial assistants?
Usually you get these papers through, and again, it's a great way to keep up to date with things. You know, often a lot of my reading is reading drafts, pre-publications, and I probably read more of that than I do published articles. And it's great that you're being sent things that an editor has decided you might have some opinions on or expertise in. So I just this week, I've used, so that, with permission, of course, a pre-publication version in one of my lectures, because it was just so timely. It was so relevant to what I was doing that week. I thought, well, it's just great to use this. And it's a real shame sometimes when you see something and you think, this is really interesting. This is something I think needs to be published. And it goes to review, it goes to perhaps an editor or two, and actually you decide not to carry it. So that quite a few examples actually with professional development in education. It's a top journal, so we get so many submissions. And we increasingly get submissions about English language teaching, which invariably come to me. And there are some fantastic insights there, some really original contributions, things that I would love to publish, and I give really positive feedback to, or you know, the reviewers come back with excellent feedback. But then you sometimes have to say, well, it's good, but it's not for us. And when I'm trying to give either reviewer or editor feedback like that, I find that really difficult. So I'll find myself saying things like, as much as it's a cliche, we really do have too many good papers to publish this year. And I'll tend to put a bit more work than I really should into kind of identifying another journal that I think would be a good fit for them, or trying to ramp up the positives and say, yeah, I really do hope this gets published, or yeah, I think there's real value in this approach. So it is quite tough when you have a paper that you think is a really good paper, but it just doesn't fit your journal, or perhaps the peer reviewers disagree with you. And that's unfortunate. Likewise, when you're an editorial assistant, you know everybody much more. So when a paper comes in, I'll do a quick check to see, is it relevant? You know, is it actually on topic? Because you'll be surprised how many papers come through that aren't on topic. Or, you know, have they taken their names off the front page? And really simple things like that. And maybe 20% of papers get sent back immediately for that reason. But more to the point, you know, the editorial assistant or the managing editor are probably the only two people who know who the reviewers are, who the authors are, who's a good fit for what thing. So when you get a paper submitted by somebody who's done some really good reviews for you, it's hard to kind of keep that back personally, because you think, well, yeah, I want to make sure that they get good reviews back. They need a bit of karma, right? And you don't want to give them an easy ride, though. You know, they've still got to meet the standards of the journal. And then just before Christmas, had to send a rejection notice to somebody. And, you know, I don't like that term. You know, the phrase we're using actually is not acceptable, and I don't like that, because it's often very good work. But this is someone who has reviewed for us for years, and we weren't sending it, and actually got past the screening editor. And it was a real shame, because, you know, they obviously know the standard of the journal, and they've helped so many other authors to get published in that journal, and we weren't able to do that for them. And I think that's where we have this strong pastoral role as lecturers, and then we have to step into this other role, almost like a gatekeeper. And experiences like that make me uncomfortable. So I would say they're the unforgettable experiences, because as an anonymous reviewer, you kind of send it out and you kind of hope that people take it as you intended, that this is helpful, useful feedback. But when you actually see who those people are, and you're the editorial assistant or you're the editor, you get the reply. You get the person saying they're upset, or that, yeah, this is the best work I've ever done, and if this isn't acceptable, I don't know what is. And those can be really difficult conversations.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mark, I know you have this role as an editorial assistant, and it's quite, it's an identity. It's a role that we don't know a lot, or we talk a lot about in journal peer review. Obviously, we know peer reviewers, editors, editorial board members. You touched on your roles a little bit when you shared your experience, but would you mind just explaining to our listeners, maybe they are new to journal peer review, what editorial?
I think it depends on the journal. So the good thing about the journals being part of the Professional Development Association is that, yeah, it's an association that can actually fund some of these places. So you can actually make a job for somebody. So in many cases, the editorial assistant would be an early career researcher, or it might even be an administrator, or somebody's secretary might do it. And it's, you know, sending out the invitations for review, it's answering the emails when somebody says, you've had my paper for 3 months, what's going on? And it is still that when I'm doing it. But increasingly with something like PDIE, where you get so many submissions, you do need somebody who can use a little bit of academic judgment. So identifying a suitable reviewer, not just by looking for a matching keyword, but actually by getting to know the reviewer base and knowing a little bit about the topic. And deciding, you know, we have a screening editor who kind of applies a filter, just kind of a general filter for quality and relevance before things go out for peer review. And not all journals have that. But I kind of sit before them. So if something is obviously off topic or is obviously not up to standard, I'll cut that out then and just send a little note to the author, and it won't even make it to the screening editor. Likewise, when the peer reviews come back, if both reviewers are saying very similar things and they're both saying to reject, again, I might not send that to the managing editor, I might just send that again to an assistant editor and say, it looks like this is a no. Can you just double check that we're happy with it being a no? So it's managing the workflow in many cases, looking for little efficiencies. But you do need to, if you're working within a particular area, you need to get to know the reviewers and the authors. And, you know, if a reviewer, for example, has kind of sick and they can't do it, then I need to know who can I get who'll turn it around quickly. So you do kind of build up a network, and it's dangerous to make friends with me at a conference because you know that you're going to get reviewer requests.
Okay. Okay. Right. So since you are with the journal on professional development, let's talk about professional development in peer review. So my next question is about your experience in navigating the peer review process. You mentioned it briefly about having your supervisor or more senior academics on your side. How did you go about it? I mean, on your own?
Oh, good question. So in a few universities I've been at, we have a kind of pre-review stage. So maybe at a lunchtime seminar, or it's just something that you'll do through email groups. So before you send something to a journal, you can send it to a couple of colleagues and get feedback. And that is so useful as a way to get a bit of practice, but also to get a bit of early feedback. Yeah, I think, I don't know if you plan to speak with him or you have, but I think some of the advice David Carlos gives about peer feedback is just fantastic. He said recently that a lot of things submitted to the top journals, they're submitted sort of 2 or 3 weeks too early, and that they would really benefit from, you know, you write it and then, again, like Paul Ashman said, you forget about it for 2 weeks and then go look. I think you can kind of look at something as a peer reviewer. You can look at your own work with a peer reviewer mindset and look at, you know, the aims and scope of the journal and see, am I actually hitting this, or would it be obvious to somebody else that I'm hitting these standards? So certainly that kind of support has helped me. Again, I'm quite lucky in that everything I do has been in feedback. So all my lectures have been experts in feedback. So you tend to get it from that direction. But also you don't have the relationship that you have with some, as a reviewer, you don't have any kind of relationship with the person who wrote the article. So a lot of your feedback strategies, techniques, they don't really work. Or, for example, the journal system. it's an excellent journal, and the editor does a really good job of, they will tell you what feedback they gave the author, and then when it comes in for revisions, they will email the reviewers at every step and say, this is the decision I made on this paper that you read. And that's a really good way for me, as my professional learning, to know what the editors are looking for and what decisions they're making about the paper, and then I can try give them the kind of review that supports that in future. But they don't allow you to make kind of track changes comments. You have to answer the prompts that they give you. You have to give a score out of 100. There are some very constrained aspects to reviewing for system. Whereas other journals, they will take a track changes thing as long as you take your name off it. And so Education in the North, for example, is very much like just giving feedback on an assignment.
Hmm.
So it does vary by journal, but I think I've kind of learned by doing. I've learned by looking at the reviews that I get. But when I was starting out, certainly I was thinking very much like I would if I were just marking an assignment. And the difficulty then is when you mark an assignment, you have criteria and grades, and you're working with a rubric, and you tend not to have that with the journal article. And yeah, it's very rarely is something accepted outright. Yeah, it's happened to me once. I don't think I've ever recommended it as a reviewer yet, just to outright accept something for publication. I've seen it a couple of times. Usually it's minor amendments, major amendments reject. So it's quite different from giving something a mark out of 100 or distinction, merit, pass. So it is a different skill, but I've never had any training on it. I've never really talked about it with other people either. I am doing a session with my doctoral students in a couple of weeks where we're going to look at a paper that I'm reviewing together and talk about the process of peer review. But I've never had anything like that. How about you?
I mean, nothing explicit, nothing systematic. And I really like, how your universities have those groups, buddy groups or critical friends, who are willing to offer feedback to you. I think that helps a lot. So from what I heard, early feedback helps. Being in the system helps. But I guess a lot of the listeners will be asking, how do I get into the system? You mentioned you are peer reviewers for a number of very good journals. You get to see different systems of peer review. But how do I get from, I'm a student, to I can be a peer reviewer? What's the process for you?
I think if you start out with the university journals, so Practitioner Research in Higher Education, I mentioned it's part of the Teacher Education Advancement Network, but it was hosted by the university I was at the time as a student. So, you got to know certain people, and the editorial assistant in that case was an administrator, but she knew I was a PhD student. So if I were reviewing a paper, there would be an experienced reviewer who was the other reviewer. So you'd get a bit of support there as well. I'd say most journals are quite happy to take on voluntary reviewers. And if you say, it's my first time, but I'm keen, then, they will give you feedback on your reviews. Generally, depending on the system you use as an editor, you have to rate a reviewer, and you have to say, maybe give them a score out of 10, or just say, is it a good review, yes or no? And that kind of aggregates over time. Some journals are linked to the Publon system, where you get credit for reviews that you've done and the scores that editors have given you. So you can get a kind of feedback that way. If you're really starting out, then I think looking at some of the journals that are run by universities, that are run as open access, volunteering your support there. As soon as you've published a paper, you'll get endless invitations to be a peer reviewer, but you need to be very selective about those, because a lot of them are, in many cases, absolute garbage journals, predatory journals. So you do need to be very careful. But I'd say a lot of the open access journals, the ones run by university departments, that they would appreciate the volunteering, and reviewing for conferences is always a good way in as well, just reviewing abstracts, joining with these professional associations, joining with journal clubs. So again, the Professional Development Association, we have a monthly journal club where everyone gets together and reads the same published article. But again, it gets you used to that, the skills that you need to look at someone's work. If there isn't a network of this pre-review, giving feedback before you submit, then you could probably start one. Otherwise, you know, I have seen people, and you know, I don't really agree with the approach. I see it when you've got a paper with lots of authors on it, that sometimes the authors haven't quite agreed on a final version themselves, and they'll send it off to review and kind of let the reviewers write the paper for them. So again, if you can offer feedback on a colleague's paper and they add you as author number six, then again, that's a way to get into the system as well. And I do now get, you know, friends and colleagues who will say, would you mind looking at this before I send it for peer review? And I know I can do the same with them. So I forget who wrote about this, but they called it Reviewer Zero instead of Reviewer One, Reviewer Two. It's a nice concept. And I don't think anybody would turn down peer reviews, especially in the last year. It's been really hard to find good, reliable reviewers. So if you find a journal that you're interested in, because you know, you want to know how a journal works, you want to know what kind of papers get accepted, you need to know if they'd be interested in your kind of work. So I think doing peer review is a great way to learn about a system, to join a network, join a community.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mark. That's some excellent suggestions. I think start with your own communities, right? Journals published by your own universities, or you know, the professional organizations that you're affiliated with. I think that's a very good starting point.
I think it can be different in different countries as well. Mm-hmm. So, I know we've talked about this actually, that when you get something where the quality of English language isn't up to standard, but the ideas are good. Again, I've seen reviewers or editors kind of just kick that out and say, it's not up to standard, or you'll see the feedback, make sure a native speaker proofreads your work. And I'll always take that out. So if you're able to offer even language feedback without content feedback, then that's something to offer. But I think that's quite a controversial topic in peer reviewing in journals, mm-hmm. generally. Mm-hmm. And I'm particularly aware that certain countries, perhaps, you know, they don't have the same kind of maturity in the system. You might be at a particular institution where there isn't a professor group. There's nobody to give you feedback. So, you know, sometimes I'll get a paper and you do have to think, you know, I'm probably the most senior academic who's ever read this person's work. And even if I'm going to reject it, I need to give them some kind of support and feedback. So again, even if you're an early career academic here in our context, there's probably somebody in, gosh, do you want to name a country? I'm Iran. I get loads of papers from academics in Iran, Turkey, Indonesia, and the ideas are so good, but you can tell maybe they don't have access to the right resources, or they haven't had the same kind of feedback prior to submission, or they haven't got quite the support on working out their ethics or their methodology, and there's gaps. And you think, yeah, so many early career academics could give them excellent feedback that would be so valuable, and perhaps have a bit more time to engage with that without having to worry about this other gatekeeper role. So if you can offer a feedback role without a gatekeeper role, then that's something that's very generous. And particularly when you look at, you know, these online groups, I'm in a couple of professional development groups on Facebook now. and you know, people share stuff there, the Ballyp group, the JISC group, where you have all the different mailing lists. There's so many ways that you can offer support to people before they get to the point of submitting it to a journal.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. I think it connects very nicely to my next question, which is about the kinds of support that you think are important for early career researchers and doctoral students to navigate the peer review process. Currently, as you mentioned, there aren't a lot of systematic or institutional-wide initiatives. It really depends on colleagues who are collegial, who are willing to give up their time to read our work. What do you think can be done, especially now in your role as a program director for doctoral program? What do you think can be done?
I think it's really tricky because the anonymity of peer review, I think, keeps it quite private. So I've asked for permission to share this review I'm doing at the moment, to share the draft and my comments with my students. Hopefully the author agrees, otherwise I'll have to find another one who does. But I'm not aware of anyone who's done that. I'm sure people do it all the time. But I've never had it offered to me. I've never seen an example of a peer review that's been done, unless it's a review of my own work. So there aren't any exemplars out there. There aren't any models to follow. There are instructions for reviewers in many cases, but often they're just kind of generic templates that the publishers provided. Now, if you want to learn about how to give good feedback, there's a whole literature on that, and it's a great skill to develop as a practitioner or as a lecturer, teacher. But I think there is that gap there, that how do you support or mentor through? I think as an editor or as an editorial assistant, if you know somebody is doing peer review for the first time, then you might pair them with a more experienced reviewer. And then, as I said, the system, you can share that review with the other reviewer, and they can see what somebody else said about the paper and what the editor said. So you can kind of work out a bit of feedback for yourself from that. But I've not seen any kind of mentoring or coaching or advice for how to do peer review. So that there's definitely a gap there.
Yeah, so I think it's not just the universities who should offer support, but the journals, the whole editorial board, and how the more senior and experienced members can mentor new reviewers, having them shadow them, for example, or co-write a peer review report. I mean, I know some journals, new journals usually, which are more experimental, they're doing this like group peer review thing. They actually would have a Zoom meeting and discussing it together, and then come up with a collaborative report. I mean, those are ideas. I mean, innovative ideas. Obviously, it takes time.
Well, we used to do that in PDIE.
So okay.
I'm not at that very early stage of, is this a decent paper or not? But when you are putting together an issue, the whole editorial board would meet and would talk about what articles would go in, and if we wanted any changes, and write the editorial for that issue. Every year we'll take an article that's been submitted but hasn't been published yet, and we'll actually do a peer review where 10 people all review the same paper and discuss it in the meeting. That kind of thing is fantastic professional development, but you kind of have to be on the board to get that professional development. So that's it. I've seen it, computer science are so ahead of the game. So I don't know if you found Fermat's Library online. There are articles there that are kind of open access that anyone can comment on. So you browse through and you see all the comments that other people have made. A bit like if you have a Kindle book and it shows you what other people have underlined or highlighted. And as you said, some of the more experimental journals, particularly in computer science, that they will have this sort of open review. I recently published in Education Sciences, and they as well as publishing your accepted paper, they give you the option to publish or to add as an appendix your originally submitted paper and the peer review comments. And I think that's a great way of opening it up as well, that you can look at a paper and think, well, gosh, I could never have written that. But then you can actually look at what someone did write the first time. Actually, yeah, I could do that. So I think that the more that we see people willing to share their early draft work, really helpful. I've seen it on ResearchGate. I keep getting invited to give comments on things or to join a discussion, or that somebody has uploaded a pre-pub. I haven't clicked on any of those and said yes, but I assume somebody does. So little things like, as you say, the more innovative ways, people getting feedback before they submit, particularly if you think peer review for a top journal, it can be 6 months before you hear back. So better to find out the basic stuff early from a friend than wait 6 months for it. So I think the more that you can use those kind of networks, the better for everybody. Mm-hmm. You learn so much from doing these reviews as well.
Yeah, I mean, a lot can be done. And I mean, there are a lot of creative ideas out there already. But, we really need a group of people who are committed, willing to try out new things. And very often, I think for journals, especially established journals, it's harder for them to change. I mean, because the current system works for them, so it may be the more experimental or newer journals, younger journals.
So I think if you go for like a print journal, well, they've only got so many pages per year, so they have to have that gatekeeper role first and foremost. It's kind of what conferences were meant to be, isn't it? That you would take your paper to a conference, get feedback from people in the room, and then go away and write your paper. Or you would actually take a paper, present it, hand it out to people, and you'd maybe get emailed back with some advice later. I guess it still happens a bit.
And nowadays, I mean, on pre-print servers, I mean, of the servers allow people to comment and to, really publish their review. I've heard one of the editors, but it's in medicine, I think, or in biology or something like this, that the comments on the preprint servers can be used by some journals. They can be recognized by some journals. So if they want to publish in those journals, they would take the feedback and, ask you to revise accordingly. I think it's, again, an innovative idea.
I like it. And it's impact on somebody else's research. It's a really high level output. Something that requires a lot of skill and expertise. So, it's good to see credit for that.
Yeah, a lot to think about. Right, Mark, just to wrap up, I mean, what would be your advice? What would you like to say to early career researchers or people doing their PhD, struggling or thinking, should I get involved in peer review, either as an author or peer reviewer?
I would say definitely get involved. It's a great way to build your network. It's a great way to learn about the journal and the kind of things that they're interested or not interested in. I think it helps avoid you taking a peer review too personally yourself when you see how a journal works. And it really is a case that they have too many good articles to consider, or that they have to limit their scope. So definitely. Look at the editorials for a journal that you're considering. Often we don't read those, or we don't get the sense of a journal as a whole. We just tend to think about individual articles. So if you get a sense of what the journal is like, what it's looking for, that helps. I'll steal Paul Ashwin's advice. Once you've written it, don't submit it. Stick it in a drawer, come back to it later. Maybe even actually print it out or read it aloud. All these things to work with the draft. Definitely send it to a friend, or if you've got a professor who offers that, send it to them. Look through the instructions to authors. Have you, have you left your name on it? Have you gone over the word count? You don't want to get rejected for something basic. Look at your citations. Have you cited anything in the journal? So some journals actually require that. I don't like it, but some do. But more to the point, if you haven't cited anything in that journal, then that's maybe a clue that you've picked the wrong journal, because there's nothing over, there's not a conversation that you're joining. So yeah, don't try to shoehorn in a reference. But if it isn't happening naturally, maybe you're in the wrong place. And I think you have the, you know, the chance to write a cover letter. I think a lot of authors don't take up either. So actually say to the editor, yeah, this is my first paper that I'm submitting. I'd really appreciate feedback on this aspect of it. Actually say the things maybe that you've identified for yourself as areas to work on, or an area that you think is particularly strong. And I think if you actually give the editor a question to work with, you'll get much better feedback from them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. All right. Yeah. Thank you very much, Mark, for your advice, and also for sharing your experience. Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for having me.